Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this.
There are those in Coburg who will tell you it is the epicenter for those living rough. Then there are others who will argue other municipalities in Northumberland County are not stepping up to do their fair share. That is no longer true. Brighton Council has a homelessness task force, and on today's show, you will hear what it is doing to help the people living rough. The chair of the task force, Jeff Wheeldon, will describe how the municipality is working to coordinate services with the county and local organizations, churches, and the business community to ensure support and dignity for those who are living unsheltered. Wheeldon will also explain how the municipality is paving a way for residents to help those in need while addressing concerns. Listen and see if your municipality could be doing something similar. It is great to have with me today Councillor Jeff Wheeldon, Chair of the Brighton Homelessness Task Force. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you, Rob. It's a pleasure to be here.
What is the Homelessness Task Force?
Sure. The Brighton Homelessness Task Force exists to understand and facilitate understanding of the street-level services provided by Northumberland County Social Services and local nonprofit and community groups, to help coordinate between those groups to strengthen their efforts to support our most vulnerable residents, and to determine what role the municipality of Brighton can and should have in this matter moving forward.
You read that very well.
That's my prepared statement.
There you go. Well, I'm glad we got that out of the way then. Who started it?
It was initiated by Mayor Brian Ostrander. He had noticed in the community that the few visibly homeless residents that we have were getting supported by the community. People were dropping off coffees or in other ways trying to help people out. And he noticed that there was not a lot of coordination between people doing that. And sometimes our friend living in the park might have half a dozen coffees in front of him. And so we thought, you know, it might be a better use of people's resources if we facilitated some coordination there. And so he wanted to figure out what can we do at the lower tier level.
Do you have any ideas in terms of statistics or a count of how many people are living like this in Brighton?
When this group was started, there was one. Now I'm aware of four, but as usual with homelessness stats, they're very fluid. Sometimes somebody is temporarily housed and then a few months later you see them on the street again. Sometimes people move in or move on. And so it's hard to say for sure, but I'm aware of four at the moment.
And when did this committee get formed?
Back in the spring. And so seeing our numbers rise from one in the spring up to four right now is concerning. That's we wanted to make sure that we could try and get out ahead of the issue because we expect it to get worse before it gets better.
Now, who sits on the task force?
The task force has Bill Smith from Northumberland County Social Services, the homelessness manager, Mayor Ostrander, Councillor McAusland, and myself, and seven members of the community representing different churches, nonprofits. The library CEO is on our task force. And so just sort of a general overview of the sort of unofficial second layer safety net that makes up a community. You know, the people who are out there doing good work in the community through the food bank or other volunteer efforts like that, it's an unofficial safety net, but it really is there for people who are falling through the cracks.
How would you define a person who is homeless?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of definitions of homelessness because it's really on a spectrum. Rural homelessness, for example, often looks like somebody living in a travel trailer in a field with a long extension cord from someone's house. Urban homelessness can sometimes look like somebody sleeping in an alley or on the stage in Memorial Park is a common place in Brighton. Sometimes people are camped out in wooded areas like Proctor Park, which is Conservation Authority land. But other times people are just precariously housed where they're going month to month or even week to week, not sure if they're going to have housing tomorrow. And sometimes they're couch surfing, moving from one place to another with no fixed address. So there's a broad spectrum of what homelessness looks like.
Now, Brighton's such a small town, and you know, we've talked a little bit about how many people are there, but the temperatures are growing colder, and as we've had in the most recent weather, there's been snow. What does the town provide for emergency or overnight respite?
That is a question that I think this task force is going to be asking council to look into and to clarify, because we do have emergency warming when temperatures reach below a certain level or when there's a major snowstorm. I know you remember a few years back there was a major snowstorm at Christmas and the 401 was closed, and I spent Christmas morning down at the arena hanging out with people who had been diverted off of the 401 and rescued from the snowdrifts. So we have emergency warming like that, but nothing on a regular basis for people experiencing chronic homelessness. And so people in that situation typically are directed to warming rooms in either Cobourg or Trenton.
I appreciate the fact that, you know, your committee wants to look at this and council would like to look at this, but one only needs to step outside and realize that this is a critical situation right now in terms of people being able to survive. Why is there not something happening right now or a special council meeting or the task force making a declaration or some step being taken on a much shorter term rather than having to wait for due process, which I appreciate, but might conflict with the reality of what's going on out there?
For sure. I mean, the reality is that these services do exist. They are being operated by the county. And so our goal as a task force is not to try and duplicate county level services at the lower tier level. Our goal is to figure out how we can best work with those existing services to make sure that everyone knows what they are and how they can access them. Because the reality is, Rob, that by the time somebody in our community notices that person sleeping in the park, social services from the county has already talked to them maybe multiple times. Amhart probably knows who they are. And so they're only there because they have turned down access to those services already. And so when we hear about it, you know, I hear about it from a resident who says, yeah, I've seen that person there for the last week and it doesn't seem like anyone's helping them. And the reality is that people are helping those persons, but they're not able to receive that help for any number of often very good reasons. There are people who don't want to go into a shelter. And at a certain point, they will either receive those services or they're going to have a hard time. And unfortunately, we can't do anything for someone who's not willing to receive it.
But with all due respect, the county has not opened its warming room yet. Mm-hmm. And it's looking like it may even be into December before it's going to open. That's still up for a decision to be made. Transition House, last time I heard anything about it, which was recently, they were almost to capacity or at capacity. If you're going to have a local solution, shouldn't you at least be offering something locally? I mean, have you spoken to any of these people and said, you know, if we opened up the library during the day that you could go there and it would be okay? Or if we opened up some space at the recreation center and said, you know, here's a place where if at night it's cold, you could at least go and have a cup of coffee and wait it out. You know, I appreciate how you're saying that the county and it's its responsibility, but if you're going to enter the arena and you're going to offer help, why aren't you offering help, especially under the current conditions?
Right. So, I mean, we are offering help in the sense that we're trying to figure out what help we can offer that isn't just duplicating what the county is doing. Because if people aren't willing to accept that support from the county, they're not going to be willing to accept it from the lower tier municipality as well. I mean, our library is open. People are always welcome in the library, and our library staff do a great job of making that a welcoming space. And so if anyone is chilly during business hours, the library is there. There are churches in the community who...
Okay, I appreciate all of that. But has somebody told the person that's in the Memorial Park or in Proctor, have they told them that? So that
yes,
they
and
know.
That's what this task force is mostly about, Rob, is trying to coordinate and facilitate between these groups, because often the right hand doesn't know what the left is doing in this regard, because we have no formal way of coordinating these services. And so one of the things we're doing is building a resource list that can be pocket sized to be handed out to people so that everyone knows what's available. We've already asked council to direct staff to install a notice board downtown that will have lists of resources available for people, and that's on its way. And so helping ensure everybody knows where everything is and what services are available to them means that we can make better use of those services.
And I appreciate all that. But obviously, again, there's this urgency with mm-hmm. the weather conditions. When is that, all of that going to get done so that these people know that there's an alternative?
Well, so we've been meeting as a task force for a number of months now, and the amount of information and connection that we've made through this task force has improved already this kind of coordination. And so now people at Supper's Ready, which is a Wednesday night meal program at the United Church, know more about the food bank, and the people at the food bank know more about social services, and people at social services know more about all of these different groups. And so we're better able to direct people to services that are available, because the reality is that not all of these services are being used as much as they could or maybe should be. And it's largely about information. Getting information out is difficult these days.
I appreciate that. And again, you're talking about collaboration between institutions rather than the people living rough who need the help. Can you give me a date? I mean, is it going to be the next couple of days that they're going to get this handout, or this notice is going to go up? It's urgent. And I hear that you're making these Herculean efforts to try and get everybody talking to each other. But what about the people on the street living rough?
Right. And again, Rob,
a date. Give me a date. Is it going to happen, or
My report is coming to the task force meeting on December 9th. So I've been getting information from all of these different groups, and I will be writing a report. I've already started it, about what role Municipality of Brighton should be playing in these things moving forward. But with regard to having new services, there will be no new services coming out of this, Rob. We're not trying to duplicate county services.
No, I understand that. I understand that.
So there's no particular date for when something new will become available. We're just trying to figure out how can we make this more effective and efficient. Because reality is, when we do open up warming space, nobody comes. And Supper's Ready is there every week for people to get a warm meal, and the visibly homeless people that we are aware of in Brighton don't come. Do they know it's there? I don't know. Can we connect that information to them? Sure. And I'm sure that County Social Services is doing a better job of that now because of the way that we've been connecting with them. But the reality is that we'll never hear from County Social Services about what they've said to anyone, because they respect those people's privacy. So, you know, we have a lot of different pools of water that we can lead people to, but we can't make them drink. And the hope is that if we can make those more apparent and make the community more aware of what services are available, that the members of our community will not see someone who's experiencing homelessness and think that nothing's being done. And also, they won't see those people and expect that they will be here forever and feel some sort of threat from them, but rather they'll see those people and say, oh, I hope that they can get the help that they need, because I'm aware that help is available at all of these different places.
You've mentioned a number of things that you're working on, so let's unpack that a little more clearly. So let's go back a bit. So what Sure. assets does a place like Brighton have to offer people living in the rough?
Sure. So we're putting together a list of those kinds of assets, and it's... In some ways, it's as straightforward as we have a food bank. Most communities have a food bank. also pointing people to the county services that are available. County services don't exist in Brighton on a day-by-day basis, but there are county outreach staff who are available in Brighton one day a week and will come out as needed. And so most people don't know that social services even exists at a county level, much less who to call. So getting that information out there is really important. And that's where most of the services go through. But then looking at, you know, are our library staff trained to support people who are experiencing homelessness? It's not technically their job to be social workers. And we don't want to put them in the position of being the de facto social workers, which often happens with public spaces like libraries. So we're bringing in a training session for municipal staff and another training session for the public. So we want all of the pastors in town and all of the volunteer groups to have access to this training so that they understand how homelessness response systems work and make sure that they know who to call. You know, sometimes people call the police because they see a homeless person and the police will say, is there an actual emergency? And they're not going to come just because you saw a homeless person. But if this person is in crisis, then yes, they're going to come. And during business hours, we have the MHART team, which I know your listeners are aware of. And so, you know, we know that these things are out there, but making sure that everyone else knows is the main thrust of what we're doing.
You've alluded to the fact that churches are involved. Besides this training session, at what levels and what things are they doing?
Sure. We have representatives from two different churches on our task force. Trinity St. Andrews runs the Suppers Ready program and also does other, for a while they were hosting street level outreach workers from the county. And I'm not sure if that's still the case, but the other churches I've talked to, the Christian Reformed Church and the Pentecostal Church, I know they both have what they call benevolent funds, which they use to sometimes give out grocery gift cards or to even put people up in the motel for a night or two. That's purely based on donations from their congregation. And so, you know, there's limits to that amount of funding. And so I don't want to put out there that people can just walk into a church and get a night at the motel, but they do things like that from time to time and as they're able.
What about the business community?
We do have a representative from the DBIA on our task force, Wayne Jefferson from the Downtown Business Improvement Area. Yeah, I mean, downtown is where we typically see people who are visibly homeless. Memorial Park is often a place where people will stay because it's sheltered from the rain. There's washroom facilities there, and that's right on Main Street. And so downtown businesses will often see those people first. And they do have concerns about some of the things that go along with homelessness. You know, there's concerns about whether or not visible homelessness on the street will deter customers. There's concerns about whether or not there will be shoplifting. I haven't heard of any in Brighton. I'm sure that it happens. But they want to make sure that they're able to stay informed about it. And we want to make sure that they're also, again, trained in what resources are available and how to make a really trauma-informed and informed approach to people who are experiencing homelessness. You know, we don't want them to feel afraid to come to work. We don't want them to stigmatize people in the community. We want everybody to be on the same page about how we can direct people to services and how we can support them compassionately.
What about service clubs and charities?
Yeah, we have a number of them in Brighton. I know I used to be a member of the Rotary Club. There's Lions Club, a number of others. We have two Probus clubs in Brighton. Getting these groups engaged with local homelessness could be a tremendous benefit to the community. Because the reality is that we have a lot of people in Brighton who are of an age and a position in life where they volunteer a lot and they give a lot. And so if we can help everyone understand the shape of the issue in Brighton, then maybe we can direct some of that giving and volunteering toward ways to strengthen our safety net here.
You mentioned the police, the OPP.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Coburg makes a big effort to make arrests and take other steps, and it's become an issue around the number of calls that they have to go out to because people call in and there's concerns within the community. Did I hear correctly that you were saying that the OPP has a different approach And I'm just wondering if there's been an increase in calls because people are starting to phone in.
I'm not aware of any increase in calls, and obviously we're in a different situation in Brighton just in terms of sheer volume. Having 4 known visibly homeless people in Brighton right now, only one or two who are in obvious places, means that it's not nearly of the same scale as it is in Coburg. But the reality is that in Brighton we have no anti-loitering bylaws or anti-camping bylaws that bylaw enforcement deals with, and so we're not going after people who are experiencing homelessness who are camping on the stage, for example. Person who's been living on our stage was asked to move yesterday so that we could have a Remembrance Day event, and she moved to just a space behind the stage, and the event went off just fine. And I expect that she's back there today. So we are not utilizing bylaw enforcement. And when it comes to the OPP, as I said, Emhart came to our task force once and described how they will come to for emergencies, but if it's not an actual emergency, I think the quote that stood out to me from the Emhart constable was that people have a right to be unwell. They're not going to arrest someone who is unwell just because they are unwell. And they will enforce the Trespass to Property Act, which is a provincial law that if the municipality feels that they need someone removed, we can ask the OPP to remove that person. And typically that has happened. Typically, we contact social services first and try and give them time to connect with the person and let them know what's going to happen. And then they can at If the person is willing, bring them into the shelter services or other services that are available, divert them somehow to more stable housing. But if not, then the OPP will come and arrest somebody if needed, or even just move them along. But we do try and minimize that. It's not there's not an overpowering number of people. It's just a few people who need support and who, for one reason or another, are not willing to access those supports. And so we try not to penalize that. This is not a punitive system, and this is it ultimately it doesn't help those people to arrest them. It doesn't help any of the rest of us either, because they will come back. This is their home.
We've talked a number of times about this program, MHART, and I just for clarity, this is a program that mental health workers coming and working directly with people living rough.
Yes, MHART stands for Mental Health and Addictions Response Team, and it's run through the OPP. It includes in Brighton, it's a team of two. It's one mental health social worker and one police constable, and they operate during business hours. So if you call 911, and it's during business hours, then and mention that it's somebody who's having a in distress downtown, and you mentioned that it's someone experiencing homelessness, they'll probably dispatch Emhart. If it's at other times of day, then Emhart will come back and follow up with that person during their hours. But we only have the one Emhart team, so that it's not 24-hour coverage.
The task force has looked at a number of other municipalities and what they do. Tell us about the various programs the task force has examined and what was its reaction?
Well, we've been looking at primarily what is available here in Brighton. There is a philosophy called asset-based community development that says start with what's strong, not with what's wrong. And so we looked at what are the strengths of each of the organizations that are represented on the task force, what other assets are available in the community. And so we've really focused our view on what's happening here, but we have not been blind to what's going on in other places. Certainly, what has been happening in Coburg affects all of Northumberland County, and that's one of the things that we have kept abreast of, because the official services available to us in Brighton are mostly housed in Coburg, and the conflicts between Coburg and County Council about how to deliver homelessness services have certainly impacted what's available to our residents as well. So we've looked at what's happening there and what's working and what isn't. We've looked at, I certainly keep abreast of what's been happening in Barrie. They've been an example of taking fairly dramatic action. Over the last number of years. And in some ways, it's been useful, and in many ways, it's been very detrimental to the community. In terms of their approach to basically outlaw homelessness, in the past, they've seen things really blow up in their face there when they tried to make it illegal for people to hand out food or water to someone experiencing homelessness, for example. They had major backlash from local churches and charities. And they had to walk that back. More recently, they've taken to issuing trespass notices, not just for a location where someone might currently be camping, but saying, no, if we find you camping there, we're going to issue you a trespass notice that prevents you from being anywhere in Barrie, with the idea being that they would effectively run people out of town. Thankfully, their social services teams there are still working very hard to house people, and that pressure of bylaw enforcement can sometimes help push people into accepting the services that are available to them through the social services department, because it really does prevent people from being able to go it alone. It overall, I think it leads to a less compassionate society, and that's something that we're trying to avoid here.
I'd like to come back and talk more about what's going on in Brighton. This sounds like this task force is almost a quasi-social services committee.
Kind of, because there are quasi-social services. You know, the food bank is not a government program, and Suppers Ready is not a government program, and yet they are absolutely social services. And in an era before there were centralized social services, this was just neighborliness. This was how we take care of each other and build community. And we know that a lot of those institutions, like churches and service clubs and things like that, are in fairly sharp decline. I've wondered in the past if that is because we have kind of centralized the social role of these things into government services. They're still there for now, and they still form sort of a second layer, because social services is really bounded by a lot of legislation, a lot of rules and requirements that are there for good reason, but sometimes are held to so firmly that they create cracks that people can fall through. And when that happens, who's there to help catch people? And reality is that it is these unofficial quasi-social services that are the only ones there to catch people. And so we wanted to tap into that and to recognize the good work people are doing in our community and say, how can we support you doing good work rather than how can we take over this work? We don't want to have a lower tier social services department. We want to have a municipal government that sees residents who are taking care of each other and says, how can we help support that?
You've alluded to this earlier, and I'd like to come back to it, and that is the divisive nature of this issue as we've witnessed in Coburg. How is the task force engaging the community, and are there divisions?
It certainly hasn't been in the news in Brighton. And so we don't have the same level of people weighing in public fora, because we're not having that conversation. It comes up occasionally on Facebook, I'm sure. But I know I've received a few emails from people who are concerned, and their concern takes the form of, you need to get rid of this person who's outside the arena. And then I try and explain, well, he has a right to be outside the arena as much as anyone else does. And then there are other people who reach out and say, hey, I noticed that this person is still here, and I'm wondering if anyone's taking care of them. And then I get to explain the way that social services works, and how, yes, this person is known to social services department and to police and whatever else, but due to privacy concerns, you'll never hear about that. And so I want to assure you, yes, this person is known, and everything that can be done for this person is being offered, and hopefully they will accept it or find alternatives. And in the meantime, take care of them in ways that you can, even if that's just as simple as making eye contact and saying hello, as you would with anyone else in town. I had someone at a church ask me the other day, but what can we really do? I said, well, it's the same thing that you would do for anyone that you care about. Anyone that you hope for better for, is just continue to love them in whatever way that in whatever form that takes. And so I do see sort of both sides of it. Some people are coming at it from a very compassionate side. Some people are coming at it from more a side that reflects their own concern and maybe even fear. And I want to be able to sit with people on both sides of that conversation. I'm not going to tell people you shouldn't be afraid, even though the stats, I could quote stats to people and say, well, statistically, that person has more to fear from you than you do from them, or things like that. But the reality is that we need to be able to work through this entire issue together, because the way that we feel about it will determine our actions. And I know that everyone in my community really would want to say that they are compassionate people, and I believe that they are. But sometimes our fear of the unknown, our fear of what we've heard, can get in the way of that compassion. And so I'm trying to make sure that my role as a counselor is to hear people's concerns and hear people's fears, and then be able to sit with them in that and say, okay, I hear you, and I understand. Here's what is being done. Here's what you can rely on, and here's what you can try. Maybe you can support this person in some way, and that will remove the barrier between you and them.
I appreciate that you're making these efforts personally and as a counselor, but what about the task force? How is it engaging the community? What is it doing around public education?
Sure. So, I mean, the task force, our mandate is to bring a report to council. And so that will be the output of the task force. But the reality is that everyone who's on the task force is there because they are already engaging the community in some respect through the organization they represent. And so, you know, the food bank will continue being the food bank, but now they just have better connections to the churches and to Suppers Ready and the library. I'm able to, through this task force, see that there is a need maybe to engage with Quinney Transit to help people get free rides on Quinney Transit. And so I sit on that board, and so I've started that conversation. So the public facing stuff is not so much, because this task force is really council facing. We want to bring that report to council, but each of the members of this task force is doing a better job at the work they were already doing because of it.
Prevention is a key component. What is the task force working on to prevent people from living in the rough before it happens rather than dealing with it afterwards?
Well, again, that's something that is a very big question. There are no groups on the task force that are oriented around prevention. I would say groups that are oriented around prevention of homelessness would be County Social Services, which is represented on the task force. Groups like Habitat for Humanity, things like that, that help people to have access to safe and secure housing. I know Habitat has a program that's funded by the county that does minor repairs on people's rental units so that they can avoid eviction, for example, because sometimes if someone's rental property is in really rough shape, then they can evict their tenant in order to renovate. That's called a renoviction. And that's how a lot of people end up homeless. If Habitat can come in and offer free repairs to people, then they can sometimes avoid that renoviction. I know the county works a lot with landlords to try and keep people housed. And so those services are available, but they're not run through our task force.
Has Brighton Council put any money into the task force and its activities?
Not into the task force and its activities. Again, our output is a report. The other output that we've had so far is, again, setting up these training sessions. Right now, I'm looking at December 11th for a training session in Brighton that is public facing. Any member of the public is welcome to come. That's being put on by County Social Services, so it's not costing us anything here in Brighton. But County Social Services sees this as a great way of improving the effectiveness of their services. And so they're offering that with staff time. And so there hasn't been any cost to Brighton. But one of the things that we're looking at is what can we be doing to support these other services? So I know Brighton has a grant and aid program that some of these groups that are represented at the task force do already take advantage of. Every year, Brighton sets aside just over 1% of last year's budget amount to be grants and aid to the community. And so groups like the Beacon Youth Drop-In Center or the Home Rainbow Youth Center take advantage of those grants. So we're looking at should we have some kind of process specifically aimed at groups that are doing this kind of work? Perhaps, or maybe our grants and aid process is effective for that, but we need to get more people aware of how to access it. So we want to make sure that we are supporting these groups, because one of the things that I hold as a principle, and I think has been reflected by this term of council, is that government should not be doing. Should not be trying to take over the good work that residents would otherwise do on their own. We're not here to centralize all services. If we see somebody doing good work in the community, we want to partner with that and support that. So, for example, the Justice, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Committee donated part of its budget to Pride events this summer. We thought we could try and create our own Pride events, but there's already Pride events going on. So let's just come alongside those groups and support them. And so, by that same principle, if there are groups that are doing good work that are supporting people experiencing homelessness, we shouldn't be trying to offer rival services. We should be looking at how can we support those volunteers who are already doing good work.
Do you think this formula that you've created in Brighton could be mirrored in other municipalities across Northumberland? Is this a path forward in terms of strengthening the county's ability to provide services and help those people who are living rough?
I do, and I don't want to say that anyone should have to have a copy of the Brighton Homelessness Task Force, but I increasingly what I see us doing is actually trying to implement at the local level the spirit and ideals of the Community Safety and Well-being Plan. Now, that is something that was written for the county back in 2021. It is due for an update. But the principle behind the Community Safety and Well-being Plan is that the entire community is safer and has better well-being when we are looking out for each other. This is not about it's the opposite of trying to solve problems through policing or things like that. And so the county has had that program or that plan in place for a number of years. Some of it has been successful. Some of it, I don't know if it's even been implemented. But the thing about the Community Safety and Well-being Plan is that it is a county-level plan that really stays at kind of the high level and doesn't have that lower tier or community-based implementation. And so taking that idea of the Community Safety and Well-being Plan and saying, how do we look after each other as a community and we'll all end up better off, and implementing at the lower tier is something that we're going to be recommending as part of this report, is saying, you know, it is time to update the county's plan, but also we want a Brighton-centric, community-rooted plan for implementing those principles so that this isn't just another way for government agencies to interface around an official plan, but it's a way of saying, how are we actually engaging the community in that? And one of our recommendations is going to be to have that lower tier plan. One of them is going to be even to have a staff member who can coordinate that.
Was there any discussion about hosting the county's warming room in Brighton?
There was at our table, at the task force table, and the reality is that the challenges of transporting people were actually really significant. You know, at one point, I was even trying to help Bill Smith find a mini bus for transporting people, but the again, I mentioned earlier that social services has a lot of rules that they have to follow, and there are legal liabilities and things like that as well. And so getting transportation would have either been through some kind of transit company that would have been egregiously expensive, or through maybe purchasing a mini bus and having staff do it, which would have had a lot of insurance implications and things like that. And so navigating that turned out to be very difficult. And I think that's one of the major reasons why they opted for county property within Coburg, despite the challenges of that, just because they couldn't get people transported.
Some in Coburg complain that it is the epicenter of dealing with people living rough in Northumberland County. What message does it send when Brighton steps forward with something like this task force?
I hope it sends a message that there are other ways of dealing with this. I know that there were comments in Coburg in the last while about trying to make Coburg a hostile place for people who are living rough, effectively. And I definitely think that You reap what you sow in that regard. I want Brighton to be a compassionate place, and so we're trying to lead through compassion, and really empower people who are doing good compassionate work. So I hope that what we're doing here in Brighton is not just good for our community, but also shows that you can do good work without having to have a big stick on the issue.
When is the report going to be brought before council?
It's coming to the task force on December 9th, and I'm hopeful it will get to a council meeting before the end of the year, but it is due to council by the spring. So I'm ahead of the game because I do recognize the urgency, but also I think that we've already learned so much about what could be done that we don't need to wait till spring to get this report out.
Jeff Wheeldon, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Rob.
That was Councillor Jeff Wheeldon, Chair of the Brighton Homelessness Task Force. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.